Welcome to Angel Talk Radio Live with your hosts, Jim and Sandy Young. Welcome, everyone. I am Reverend Sandy.
And I am Reverend Jim.
Welcome to Angel Talk Radio Live. Our show is sponsored by the Living Light Center, a church of faith and healing. For anyone interested, Jim and I do personal readings. And if you'd like to have a personal reading, you can call 304-567-3354 or email sandysangeltalk@aol.com. That's sandysangeltalk@aol.com. Well, welcome everyone to Angel Talk. Today we have a special show for you. Why are we here and what is our purpose? Have you found yourself praying or asking and wondering? Even King David said, "Who is man that thou art mindful of him?" Well, we're going to share with you the answer to King David's question, why there is no more time to wait to understand our purpose. The signs are here every day to show us who we are and why we are here.
You know, it's so true, Sandy. And, you know, I don't like to use this word, but we are in a time of judgment, say the angels. And God is looking and feeling and knowing, you know, our lives, what we have done with our life, what have we done with each day. And if it starts yesterday, great, and it continues. But the key right now is that we have to be aware that God is one. And that means that he created us. And so we are one. And it doesn't matter what your religious beliefs, what your doctrine, it just doesn't matter. If you can believe that God is one and that God created every one of us, everything, then we are one. We need to be one. If we can't be one, then it leaves us outside the circle. It's so interesting. I read this story about a guru and his guy he was teaching and his initiate, and they're walking along the path, and the initiate says, "Master," he said, "you know, why is it so important to be one with God? And if it is even, you know, how do we get there? How do we know? I mean, how do we know and how do we stay in that light, in that, you know, frequency, so to speak?" And the guru, the master, turned around and looked at him, and he grabbed him by the hair. He drug him down through the woods and into the river, and he shoved his head under the water, and he held it there, I mean, as long as he possibly could, until he let the initiate up out of the water. And the initiate is breathing, just trying to catch his breath. And he said, "What was that for?" And the guru says, "Well, you know how hard and how bad you wanted that breath, to be able to breathe, and how hard you struggled for it? That's exactly what you should be doing to be one with God. You should want it so bad as you wanted to be able to breathe under that water. That's how bad you should want it." And I thought that was, you know, that really gives you a perspective.
It does.
I mean, it's every day, everything. We're being told, you know, in the prophecies that it's not about the material anymore. You know, look straight ahead. Peter walked on the water when he looked straight ahead and he saw Jesus. But if he turned his head left or right, he sunk beneath the waves. And it's really, it's all throughout the Holy Scriptures, you know, and I don't care which Holy Scriptures that you are, you know, part of your divinity, but even in the ancient text of most all, you will find the same premise that, you know, we must keep our eyes on God and everything we do should be for God. You know, now you say, well, you know, but we need to eat, right? And we need to breathe. We need, you know, water. But you know what? God created all them. And haven't you? You wouldn't be here right now if you hadn't had water. You hadn't had something to eat. So, or a place to live. So the idea is that too often we struggle in this earth plane to achieve what it is we think we need. We've got to have that. Got to have this. Oh, I can't, you know, not have a big enough bank account when I retire. You know, so I've really got to struggle for that. And we struggle all of our lives. And half the time, you know, people die a little bit early and they don't even get to utilize it. I mean, and what was it for? I mean, you know, were you getting by? Were you getting food? Were you getting something to drink? And I mean, the idea is that we try to create it here. We try to think that, and this was part of the fall, was to think that we were God or we were God. And so we started just trying to create it on our own. That's, I need a new house. Let me just go up here and cut some wood and make me a house. You know, and that is not God's way. That's the way of the material. That is the way that was part of the fall. It is really about spirit. Everything should be in oneness with spirit, and you take it to God. And God already knows your needs. You know, when I pray, I say to God, I know you know what I need already. And so I'm going to praise you and thank you for bringing to me what I need. And, you know, and I ponder it for a little while, and that's really how my prayer goes. I do use some of the sacred names in my prayer, but God already knows. And trust me, he's already prepared it. If you're asking for it now, it's ahead of you. That's the only place it could be created. Can't be created in the past. Can't be created in the now, because there really isn't the now. So it has to be in the future. And so what you're asking for, God has already created. Or, you know, how are you going to get it? So you go to God, and God is already preparing it. And it is right ahead of you. And if you walk the path that is only God, then you can't help but stumble over what it is that you were needing. I mean, literally stumble over it. And, you know, or you can take the path that created the fall, which is to believe that you have the power. You have the power to create whatever you want. You can go to work, and I'm smart, you know. I can put together a rocket. Good for you, you know. If you're one with God, guess what? You don't need a rocket, you know, to get to where you're going. And it's really, we think it's hard, but even in ancient times, God would come in and God would do a covenant with his people. And the very next day, along would come, you know, that one who in spirit form has no power. You know, the dark has no power. It's just absent the light. And so it has no power. The only power it has is to influence you. And if you allow it to influence you and to do it differently than God's way, then you are in the fall. And it's hard to get back up out of there, because it's like every moment of every day, you have to be focused on what God wants for your life. And what you need, take to God and just know that God will provide. God has every promise God has ever made to me, he has kept. I can tell you that right off the bat. And, you know, you should want it as bad as that guy wanted to take a breath under that water. And if we build it with God in spirit, then it manifests into the material realm perfectly. And there's so much corruption, so much that's out of kilter, so much. There are times when the moon comes up in the west. I mean, we watch it. Sometimes it's coming up in the south. Sometimes it's in the east. I mean, you know, everything is off kilter right now, depending on the gravitational forces around our planet. And we should be preparing for this judgment. I mean, but it's already started. We are being judged every day. Where are you in your love? Where are you in your oneness with God? Where are you in your purpose? Your purpose should be whatever God's purpose is. And when we can do that, then we are at the very bottom rung. And you got to be okay with that. You know, the very bottom rung, because you are a servant. Becoming a servant to God, and God will use you, and you rise to the top. Before long, you will be at the very top in oneness with God, just by doing it, acting it, walking it. That's faith. Faith the evidence of things not seen. And in the darkness is light. You just can't see it. But that doesn't mean it doesn't exist. Light has always existed.
Absolutely. Well, let me share a prophecy message with you. Are you so quick to believe that your lives are just filled with problems, that they are taking away all of your free time, that the demands on yourself are overwhelming? Then ask yourself, do you take the time to pray to God, to ask for help and guidance? Or do you feel separated and alone? If so, hold the belief that God has never abandoned you. He is always there. Maybe you've turned from him. Ask that his love and light fill your body and allow your mind to understand better what you need to do to move into a better space. See yourself embraced in the arms of Christ Jesus. Know the endless love he has for you. Trust and have faith that whatever you are going through, your faith in him will lead you in the right direction to deal with whatever it is you're dealing with. We want to grow and explore new opportunities, but sometimes they don't play out the way we had hoped they will. Always focus within yourself and feel what that decision is embracing. If you feel uncomfortable with your decision, maybe it's not the right choice. Don't be impatient with your choices and force rushing into them. Allow them to unfold naturally, and then you may know the real truth. Always see God in all your choices, and you will probably avoid a lot of problems. Allow your connection to God to grow stronger every day, for it is through him that you will know who you are. And always remember, God loves you. Blessings to you.
Well, that was pretty powerful, wasn't it?
Yeah. Okay, now, to rise to oneness, to move with certainty with God, we must first become as a servant to God within everything, no exceptions. By becoming the lowest through obedience, humbleness, you are given a new heart and a new spirit, casting away the need for ownership of material distractions. You then and only then can you rise without the weight of the transgressions, face to face with the Spirit of God. You know, the experiences that one may have in a spiritual body and the reactions that have been built by various experiences within the earth, in the universe, this is what composes the individual. So from that point, to incarnate into a physical body, we are given the opportunity to create or to give or to be life. But we must be a responsible example of the oneness with God. We're not to try to separate from creation, from our God consciousness, for if we do, then everything that we try to create will gradually deteriorate. So as long as life is in whatever we try to manifest in the physical world, there will be growth. But if we try to create just inanimate objects, it immediately begins to deteriorate and eventually disintegrate. So I'm going to share with you some things of Edgar Cayce. Another part of our purpose is to see life on this earth in perspective. Our purpose in life as God originally created man is to glorify God and enjoy fellowship with him, to have a good relationship with others, to work, and to have dominion over the earth. But with mankind's fall into sin, fellowship with God is broken, relationships with others are strained, and work seems to always be frustrating, and mankind struggles to maintain any semblance of dominion over nature. Only by restoring fellowship with God through faith in Jesus Christ can purpose in life be rediscovered. The soul is the God part in ourselves, the living God. The soul was made in the image of our Creator. Now, not our body, nor our mind, just our soul is in the image of the Creator. So as the body changes, the soul remains ever as one. For it is the image of the Creator, and it has its birthright in Him. The soul is a spark, or a portion of the whole. Now, this is also known as the first cause or purpose. The soul is the body of, or the essence of, the person that's incarnating into the physical world. So when the soul departs the physical body, it has all the form of the body from which it has passed, yet it is not generally visible to our physical eyes unless the mind is attuned to the spirit realm or has clairvoyant abilities. Then it can be seen with all of its attributes of the physical body, including its desires, until it's one with the universal consciousness. The statement, "Know, O ye children of men, the Lord thy God is one." Well, each spirit, each manifestation of life is one. One meaning Him, the I Am, Yehovah, Yah, or the All One. The basis then is, "Know, O Israel, the Lord thy God is one," from Mark 12:29. From this premise, we would reason that in the manifestation of all power, force, motion, and vibration, or anything that impels, that which distracts, is an essence of one force. It is the one source in its physical elemental form. So let us understand that the one source or the one force is God, the first cause, the first principle, and the first movement. For God is. That's the beginning, that is, that was, and ever shall be. There is a movement that separates energies into atomic forces, and it's called the first cause, or the manifestation of that called God in the physical world. So we need to recognize that all that we do needs to be connected or part of the one source, the creative force, and the first cause. So when we want to manifest something physically, we are aware of God, or the first cause, when we do this here, where we are. So when we do, we become conscious of the union of these forces or energies that work in the physical, in the seen and unseen realms, or in the finite and the infinite. We must understand that we are always in the field of energy to be a channel, an emissary for God, and may that God be the Lord God of hosts. His name is one. Know that within yourself, all that may happen in your experiences on the earth is an opportunity that you may know the Lord thy God is one Lord. So we must seek the oneness with God, the oneness of purpose, the oneness in every effort and everything we do. Know that the spirit of numbers is as one, from which each and every other ratio must be measured. For in the beginning was the Word, and the Word was God. And in the oneness of the whole, all may be attained, and all may be gained, and you are given the introspective in your material phases. But in yourself alone, little may be gained. So, life or manifestation of everything in motion is receiving its impulses from the first cause, that which has brought and is bringing all life into being with its force, its power, its movement, and consciousness of all the levels of the physical, mental, and spiritual planes. It is the force that is called Lord, God, Jehovah, Yah, Om, Abba, and the like. Any activity that is seen in the physical realm is a manifestation of the first cause. The greatest lesson the world has ever known is, "Know, O ye peoples, the Lord thy God is one." One. This is the message that is our purpose. So proclaim and sow that seed of unity of purpose, for this is the mission through all our experiences. Know that the creative forces called God maybe as personal as you want it to be, for the spirit is in the image of the creative forces and seeks manifestation. So if we were to understand that the Lord thy God is one, by Mark 12:29, and all power, all force emanates from this one source, we will get an understanding of ourselves and our abilities. So know self, be true to self, and you'll not be false to anyone else. For life in the physical world, if God manifested in the material plane, for it is still in him that we live and move and have our being, Acts 17:28. So life as a material manifestation is an expression of the universal force or energy we call God. For life is the manifestation of that which is worshipped, that which is sought by our soul, God in movement and manifestation. For truth is life, life is light, and God is light. He is the creative force in your experiences. For life is God in action as part of you. It's important to recognize patience. For in patience, you become aware of your soul, that the body, mind, and soul are one. They live together. Your personality is the physical expression, and your individuality is your personality of your soul. Your personality comes from the desires you involve yourself with while in the physical body. When we become one with the personality of God, we will find that it is the same as that was attained in the Holy Land. The gift of God to all people was to have an individual soul that may be one with him, and that may know itself to be one with him, and yet individual in itself, with the attributes of the whole, yet not the whole. Got to ponder that one. So, personality is that seen by others. Individuality is that which shines out from within, separating one from another. The two need not be one, but their purpose must be one. Because even as the Father, Son, and Holy Spirit are one, so must the body, mind, and soul be one in purpose. Then, as you ask and believing, so it is given to you. We are meant to be able to self-express, to be free and gain knowledge. For when you know the truth shall indeed set you free. John 8:32. It shall set you free from yourself. It gives you the opportunity to be free from a consciousness and to grow into a greater consciousness. Our soul is divided from the Godhead to be a companion with God, with that force, that influence, and that purpose. For the purpose is to grow in grace and knowledge and understanding, and to understand your oneness with God better. For all that we manifest in the physical world is a shadow of that which is of the mental and the spiritual realms. The whole of experience for each of us on this physical world is the coordinating and cooperation of the creative forces from outside of us to the divine within us. Then through this, it will manifest health and happiness. That's what we're looking for. The purpose for each soul's experience in the physical realm are that the book of remembrances may be opened and that the soul may know its relationship to God. See, the purpose of our soul and all the activities in the consciousness of the mind, body, and spirit is to know ourself, to be ourself, and part of the whole, not the whole, but one with the whole, so that we may retain our individuality. Knowing ourselves to be ourselves, yet one with the purposes of the first cause that called our soul into being aware, to being conscious of ourselves, that we may be individual and aware that we are that, yet are still connected to God. Opportunity is a material manifestation of a spiritual ideal, and through a physical body, the soul has an opportunity to express the attainments developed in other spheres of consciousness. Life in the earth becomes an opportunity for paralleling, for correlating, for cooperating, for bringing into existence the effects of using all experience presented for the development of our soul. So therefore, opportunity primarily is the material manifestation of the spiritual actions that through our conscious forces, well, in the physical world. One of the purposes for every soul is that the soul may become aware or conscious of the divine within, that the soul body may be cleansed so that it may be a fit companion for the glory of the creative forces of God. The purposes of coming to this world is to meet ourselves and to overcome those weaknesses in ourselves and become more and more adaptable to the spiritual truths that are a part of each and every one of us. The purpose of each soul coming here is to complete a cycle, to get closer to the infinite. A cycle is the change or the using up of a force or an energy to where the change may be definitely set as change. That's a cycle, whether of the life in a manifested form or in the body or in the mind or in the stars or in the whole of anything. It's as a change, a cycle. So for that which is, was, and will be, only the mortal or material or physical matter changes. But the expression prompted by spirit of truth lives on. Only the soul lives on. That which had a beginning has an end. The soul is part of the beginning and the end. So one of the things that is so hard to understand is that in our minds and the experiences that we go through, that these activities of the soul are for self-development. Yet, they must be selfless when doing them in order for the soul to develop. If we allow the self to indulge in selfish acts, we only set our growth backwards. It is through understanding our connection to God and acting in a pure way that allows us the most spiritual awareness and growth.
You know, Sandy, too, it's even that if we do for everyone else what we would do for ourselves, then you are creating oneness. It is the movement of the light of God, and creative forces or creation itself occurs only when there is movement. So if we sit back or stand back and just watch and maybe pray a little bit or meditate or whatever it is we do, but without action, without activity, we have really done nothing. You know, it is to take that spiritual force within ourselves, which is everything. It is all things, all knowing, all creation. It is everything that exists. You know, when you look at the dark forces, so to speak, or the not so shiny light as the angels like to refer to them, you know, it has no power. The only power it has is to scare you or to get you or influence you to do something in the material plane that is out of, you know, out of the walk that God would have you be. And then you give it power. But other than that, it has no power whatsoever. God has no adversaries. God is not limited by your circumstances. And when we can understand that aspect, that there is no power in it, there is no power in the not so shiny light. The only thing it can do is just try its best to scare you. If you remember when Jesus was in the desert for the 40 days, finally he said to Satan, he said, you know, I will not call upon my Father to save me from you. And I pondered that for a long time. And I come to realize, because he knew there was no power
all the things that he, that was being promised by, you know, this not so shiny being, you know, he already had. I mean, and belongs to God anyway. Everything belongs to God. And our biggest problem is fear. You know, we fear taking that step. Well, if I step out there, you know, am I going to have all kinds of calamities? Am I going to have, you know, this come up against me or that come up against me? Again, there is no power in it. You know, you laugh at it. Now, that sometimes makes it a little madder. I mean, trust me, I've been over at the courthouse and, you know, I go through records and I find so much corruption and I smile about it. I laugh about it. And you can just see it absolutely makes them angry. And I even had one commissioner tell me, you know, never come back. Don't you ever come back to this courthouse. And I said, why? He said, well, you've been down at the assessor's office, you know, every day for the last, you know, years or couple of years, every day causing trouble. And I said, really? I said, who told you that? And the assessor said, well, let me ask you something. I said, you know, this courthouse has cameras, right? He said, well, no, we don't have cameras. He said, that would be illegal. You're a commissioner? I said, because I would consider it very irresponsible if this courthouse did not have cameras that would keep track of who comes and who goes. And, you know, and for safety purposes, I mean, common sense tells me that. Well, we don't still have them. Really? I said, tell you what, walk through that door right there, that glass door, and into the hallway and look up. And there was a camera there. I was aware of it, knew it was there. And it was so funny because later that afternoon, I was talking with a state police officer and down here at the church. And I asked him, I said, yeah, I know there's cameras in the courthouse. I said, I don't know how many. He said, there's 60 cameras in the courthouse. And I thought, you know, just go back and look at the cameras. And you'll see that I haven't been in that assessor's office except one time in the last 10 or 15 years. And, you know, it comes up against you and it will seem like it's strong, but it's not. They will trip over themselves. They will constantly make mistakes. And, you know, you don't fight up against them because I never have. I go in there with a smile on my face, you know, and I laugh and I joke. And like I said, that just gets them even more, you know, worried. And I know when I leave, they're probably all talking about me. It doesn't matter. You know, I mean, I'm there for just a purpose and I do my purpose, you know, and then I leave. But, you know, they're running around like roaches that somebody just flipped the light on. And that is the key on our planet right now. We have to not have any fear at all, number one, because God is great. I mean, you know, he will almost always give you what you need to get out of any situation. He is the one through whom all extremes are met. That is the Christ. And you walk with that inside you, that knowingness, that fullness of the heart. Once you can feel the overflow of love from your heart, you know, none of that other stuff matters. It just doesn't. And right now we're being judged on, are we willing to let go of matter, the material thing? And the human body will fight you. It doesn't want to give it up. Oh, no. Oh, no, I need those. No, don't touch those shoes. I need those shoes. We've had them for 20 years. You know, I still need them. I may need them one day, you know. And we can't let that continue because it will only distract us. If you can stop and think of how many times in a day that you're distracted by something, you pick up something and something else falls. You got to go then pick it up. Or, you know, when you've got something planned to do and the phone rings and you got to take care of that issue or whatever it is, most of our day is consumed by things that are obstructing us, things that are in the material. They're not in spirit form. They're in the material. If we can just let go of them, you know, is there anything more important, a car, a truck, anything you have, anything more important than God? Than God taking up your life so that you can be lifted out of this planet someday and you can walk without having the fear, without having to worry about, you know, tomorrow's breakfast or the next day's, you know, meal. I mean, and we do, we worry about that kind of stuff. I don't care how good a job we got. We worry about whether or not we're going to be able to eat next month. I mean, you know, and yet, God has always provided. Always. You know, the people of God, we must increasingly live against the flow of culture. Culture. You know, I recently ran for an office. I really didn't expect to win, but I wanted to be able to see inside. And, oh, it was like flipping on a light switch at night. Cockroaches come running out. And, I mean, it was almost like a circus. If you could have seen it, I mean, they exposed everything. I mean, exposed it all. And they had to, because otherwise they were afraid that if I won, things were going to change. Well, it has nothing to do with me. You know, I was led to do that by God, and it didn't change what I was doing anyway. And I just walked it, and they reacted. I didn't. And it says the church must likewise operate less and less as a cultural institution and increasingly as a counter-cultural phenomenon. In times of evil, the righteous will stand in the minority. They must not fear the majority, conform to it, or be silenced by it. And they try. Be intimidated by it, or in any way be moved because of it. They must neither seek its approval nor fear its reproach. The greatest of man's evils have been committed or made possible by that majority. That majority has no moral authority, but the ways of God are true and right, and the one who stands in them will be greater than that or any majority. The power is in the walking, the path of God. Forget about the rest of the stuff. You know, again, the body, physical, will fight you. You know, who cares? I mean, you know, put it aside. You know, somebody told me the other day, they said, you know, sing a song in your mind or even out loud that is spiritual, a spiritual song, and let it fill your body and your heart. And as you end the song, try to say a cuss word. You can't. It won't come out right, because you're aligning with a different force, and that different force has no place in the curse word. And listen to the word curse. You know, one of the things that Adam had occur when he was in the garden was when they fell and God made them leave the garden, he said, from this day on, you will survive by your bread, by making your bread, growing what you need to make the bread, and you will survive by the sweat of your brow and by the bread. And it was in some ways a curse. From that day forward, mankind has tried and tried and tried. And the one thing that has lasted is bread. And at the Last Supper, when Jesus is sitting at the table, you'll see in most pictures above his head, he has the unleavened bread. It's a round piece, and he holds it up above his head and he breaks it. And today we even call it breaking bread when we sit down to supper. And that's a good thing. Because when he broke the bread, he broke the curse. No longer was man tied to the bread, that he would have to survive only by sweating every day to create that bread. And it's telling you that everything Jesus did, he walked, it had a path, and then it attached itself to the last step and to the next step. Everything was connected. Why? Because he was one with God. He walked in the path of God, and God took them right along. And you can see the miracles as they occur. Some of them were little, some of them were great, but they were there. And I can tell you from my own life that when I walk like that, in that type of a path, that it's amazing that they just come out of nowhere. Even sometimes they seem little, but they're not so little. You know, there's something that just makes your heart filled with joy, you know, because you've helped someone, or, you know, someone really needed at that moment for someone to be there that could explain something you needed to know. And God will use you. And because everything you need to know is within every cell of your body. That's where God hid it. People say, well, don't you think sometimes they change this or that in the Bible, or they've added something? You know what? Doesn't matter. You read it, and the truth of it will come right out of the cells of your body. God will bring it out if you desire it. God will bring it out. A candle in the daylight can hardly be seen, but the candle that shines at night lights up the dark. The righteous of this hour must shine as a candle in the night against the darkness to light up the night. And if you think about it, I mean, it's that we must fear no evil and remember that it is, again, it is powerless and God is almighty and the almighty is good. And when we can do that, remember there's only the two sides. Only because we have choice are there two sides. Otherwise, there wouldn't even be two sides. But there is the light and there's the not so shiny light. And that not so shiny light, you know, they have a whole bunch of little tricks and things to snare you up and think that you're doing what's right. How often do we justify what we do? You know, we'll do something and somehow we'll justify that, oh, God wanted us to do that. You know, God wanted us to, you know, send over a great big missile and blow up a bunch of people. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that it's not necessary sometimes that there's going to be war, but we should first and foremost go to God. And who knows, maybe, just maybe, it's not as necessary as we may think it is. And that is the key. No matter what the circumstances, no matter what the culture, no matter what the odds, there's always a way to fulfill the will of God. There's always a way to overcome. And that's the key, is it not? I mean, you know, it's about overcoming. And at every moment, if we feel we're being pulled to the other side, we have to overcome. We have to make up our mind. And it's really choice. I can't tell you the number of people who say, I gave my life to God, you know, when I was 12 years old or something. And and I know that I'm going to heaven, and so I don't worry about it. I hear you, but I don't find that anywhere in my Bible or in, you know, in the way Spirit has manifested in my life. Because I have always felt that if I was going to teach it, I had to walk it. And so I have. And it has always proven itself out. And that's the miracle of it. That is the beauty of it. There is nothing more beautiful than that. And it needs to be a mindset. And when it is, when you have a mindset of, I am only going to do that which is the will of God, and I'm going to let him lead me, and along the path, it will reveal itself. And I will not, you know, do anything that is just for the material purposes itself. And when you could do that, and you constantly got to bring yourself back to that point. If you stray, back to that point. And as you do, it will become a part of you. God will give you a new heart. God will give you a new mindset. God will give you the power within you that nothing can come up against you. And isn't that the key? Isn't that what we've waited for so long?
Oh, yeah, for sure. Absolutely. Well, you know, there's a part of purifying our mind that is very important. And one of the best ways to do it is through meditation, you know? A good way to consider this process is to observe what takes your attention when you sit down and try to enter into silence. Do you find that your mind goes quickly to a movie that you've just seen, or a television program, or to a certain kind of music, or to a relationship with another person? You know, does it move towards a project that you're looking forward to participating in? Well, then, as we observe those tendencies, we begin to see some of the things held in the mind that work against attunement, which would enhance the approach to the divine. You see, this quest for the divine now, as always, must be within the inner self. The body is the temple. It is within that he has promised to meet us. And when we contemplate this promise, this possibility, this amazing and most unthinkable confrontation with God within our own present limited being, we become doubtful or perhaps afraid or ashamed. But this is the great invitation to every soul. Then let us set our house in order. If meditation is meeting God within our bodies, which are the temples given us as the means for such an approach, then the desire must be first to know Him. This is the essence of meditative practice, that beside which there is no other which may assure our quick success. You see, first, we need to desire to know God. One way in which we may begin to put that desire into activity is by purging the body and the mind of those things we conceive of as being hindrances to that endeavor. So this is not doing what someone else says. It is rather changing what is in our own mind that constitutes a hindrance to serious meditation. You see, the Edgar Cayce readings frequently mention biblical passages such as Deuteronomy 30 or Jeremiah 31 or Hebrews 10 and Romans 10 that indicate that it isn't who will descend from heaven to bring you a message, nor who would come from over the seas, but lo, you find Him within thine own heart, within thine own consciousness. So, even as the psalmist says, blessed is he who meditates day and night on the law of the Lord, Psalms 1, 1 and 2. What would you do if you were to meet God face to face? You know, we are warned that such a consideration may make us fearful. Have we gone so far astray that we cannot realize that an all-loving, all-merciful, all-powerful Father God would not only already know, but also eagerly supply what is truly needed for the attuning of the physical and mental to our true being? Of course He would. So just remember, if you will meditate, open your heart, your mind, and let your body and mind be channels that you may do the things you ask God to do for you, then you come to know Him. Would you ask God to do for you that you would not do for your brother? Well, we must begin to do those things that we would inquire of the divine. There must be the consistency between our practices in relationships with others and what we're asking for God to do for us. Are we asking God to forgive us while we are still holding something against another person? The instructions for meditation seem to require an inventory of what needs to be done in our lives with respect to ourselves and others. So measuring up to our own ideals will enable us to attune the physical and mental to the spiritual. See, the essence of meditating process is facilitated by activities in the daily life in which we see Him and others. A tremendously beautiful, penetrating, and promising challenge to approach the divine is given, for He is not past finding out, and if you will know Him, tune into Him, turn, look, hope, act in such a way that you expect Him, that God, to meet you face to face. Be not afraid. It is I, saith he that come, those seeking to know their relationship with their Maker.
You know, Sandy, too, there's so many people that I talk to, and, you know, when you start getting in depth, you start hearing stories about how, you know, they were part of this one group or another group, and it did magic. And I tell you, it's one of the, in the beginning of time, it was one of the worst, you know, things that could have been done. And spiritual people tried to use magic back, you know, and it created wars between them. And you know what? It is one of the biggest pariahs on the face of this earth. And God is not mocked. You know, I would say to those who think that magic is the way to influence anyone and take away their free will, not even God interferes with man's free will. We are the only creation that is allowed to defy our own God. And so, you know, that magic can be put in its place. And there is the heavenly court that one can go to. And in humbleness, ask that
to be taken and removed so that it no longer affects you. And, you know, it is very difficult, and it's getting bigger and bigger and bigger as we move into these last times. And when I say these last times, we are so much closer than most people even think. And it's not an ending. There's the Alpha and there's the Omega. One is the beginning and as the end. And the end will be as the beginning. But then the end becomes the beginning. And we were told that, except that in the new Alpha, there'll be 8 days. I remember the Beatles song, 8 days a week, you know, but there'll be an eighth day. And it's that the people of God must never lose hope, and that they must never give up praying for revival, that they must not only pray for revival, but they must actually begin living in revival. If you do that, revival will begin. The first outpouring of Spirit produced the book of Acts. If there is to be a second outpouring, then it is for the purpose of producing an effect comparable to the book of Acts. It must be for the purpose of imparting at the end of the age the power of the beginning. And thus the end time believer is to be given the power to live as did the first disciples and messengers of the gospel of the book of Acts. The end time believer is therefore to rise to the mantle of the first believers, to live as they lived, to stand as they stood, to believe as they believed, and to overcome as they overcame the world. One last thing I want to impart to you is that if you want to feel what it feels like to have unconditional love or even compassion, when you hug someone and truly hug them with your heart, put your hearts together and hug someone like you really mean it, not like the little pat on the back or whatever, really hug them, and just, you don't let go until all of a sudden you feel like it's just letting go on its own. And the first let go will raise you in compassion. And the story is the story of Jack and the Beanstalk. It's fractal. And as you go up and around the fractal, when you get to 3/5 of the way, you reach compassion. And you can feel it as the hug lets go. But if the person is willing to really hug and hug and hug, I mean, you hug even more until it just lets go on its own. And when that happens, you have reached the golden mean spiral, which is 1.618. Is that correct, Mom?
Yeah.
Darling?
Mm-hmm.
1.618. And it is the golden mean spiral. It is the spiral that the great pyramids were built in. And it brings unconditional love. And you will feel that. As that hug lets go, you will feel it in your heart. And as you keep doing that, you won't want to let go. You won't want to have that not there. I mean, it is the most beautiful experience and feeling that you could ever imagine. And yet very few people hug like that anymore. And it doesn't have to be anything that's, you know, sexual or whatever. I mean, it's a hug. It's putting the two hearts together. When you have the small part of the heart, the large part of the heart, and you and someone else put your two hearts together, the bigger part of your heart overlays the smaller part of theirs. And you have, I think, 7 nerve centers in the one part of the heart and 5 in the other. And that's 12. That's the number of the Christ or the Father. And it's the oneness. And that's how Jack was able to go up that beanstalk and get that goose, Mother Goose, that laid the golden egg and bring it back. And he was set for life, because that's all that mattered, was to gain, get to the heavens. And up there, God will produce what you need. And Jack came back with everything he needed for the rest of his life. And that's the walk. I'm telling you, we fear it. That's impossible. That can't possibly happen. And yet, with God, all things are possible. Nothing is impossible. The outpouring of the Spirit is a sign of that. The Spirit imparts the power to do what is impossible to be done. And I know that to be true for a fact. The end times will present the people of God with impossibilities.
but the Spirit of God will give them the power to do the impossible. Therefore, they must commit, that word, commit, to believing the impossible, praying for the impossible, living in the impossible, moving in the impossible, doing the impossible, and overcoming in the impossible.
There is no doubt. You are absolutely right.
And so, you know, each day as you wake up, ask God to, you know, take you by the hand and bring along those opportunities that may be small, that where someone has a need and you may be able to help, and to bring those along your path. And you will be amazed how they come out of nowhere. And it's so simple, and yet you'll make that person's day. And then there are the big ones that come along. It's amazing. I mean, you know, if you look at my resume, you could see where I have stepped off a plane into the middle of a civil war, you know, that I didn't know was there at the time. And it had just started to occur. And yet I had no fear, because I'm really good. No, because God was with me. I mean, I could feel it. I mean, it was like I was like a different person. I could feel the Spirit of God fill me. And, you know, and even the military individual that I was with, he could see it. And he questioned it the whole way. He even asked me at one time, you're part of one of those agencies, aren't you? You know, I mean, I know you are, because you couldn't have done and know the things you know, or do the things you've done. And I said, okay, finally, yes, I am. I'm part of the AIA. And he said, what is that, like a part of, you know, in the CIA or something? I said, no. I said, it's the Angelic Intelligence Agency. I said, trust me, whatever you know, they know first. So give us a call. We'd like to know what you think. And we'd like to know if you have questions, you know, we'd love to be able to answer them. And we're going to be having a giveaway for a couple of T-shirts for BBS Radio. And they're wonderful T-shirts. I have mine on right now. I love it. And, they were provided by, you know, the owners, of BBS, but 304-567-3354 or 1-800-860-6605. Is that correct, babe?
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So call us or email sandy.angeltalk@aol.com. You know, we'd love to hear from you, and, you know, or have questions. You know, give me a microphone and I can talk all day.
And we want to thank all of you for joining us for this radio show, and we hope that you will join us again in 2 weeks. God bless.
God bless.